This week on Bloodstream, Blood of the Paladin, a new podcast hosted by Catherine Lerner with guest Dungeon Master Brennan Lee Mulligan, chronicling the life, the most unlikely life story of hemophilia blood brother and HIV/AIDS survivor Jonathan Hill, and the extraordinary role that D&D played in his life, of all things. Well, that is out now. Episode 1, it's a must listen, one of the most creative and dynamic projects we have ever taken on. You can find Blood of the Paladin on Apple Pod, Spotify, SoundCloud, or by going to bloodstreammedia.com.
And The Pain Pod is back. Season 2 focuses on the patient experience, and the teaser is live now. And writer, host, producer Mel Forrest joins us today to tell us all about it.
We'll also be joined by Effie Parks, a rare disease mom and the host of the rare disease podcast, Once Upon a Gene.
When you don't feel alone anymore, everything changes and your mindset can shift, and it can finally open up a door of maybe something that you're inspired to do, or even if it just makes you feel better.
Hi all, I'm your host, Patrick James Lynch.
And I am your other host, Amy Board.
A weekly reminder that doctors are doctors, podcasters are podcasters, and we are the latter.
Definitely a better way to say that, but it is true.
Oh, thanks, Bordeaux. You just volunteered yourself to write next week's intro, so thanks for that. And thank you all for listening. You can find us on Apple Pod, Spotify, wherever. Subscribe, tell a friend, spread the word. Word of mouth is our best friend, so word your mouth. And hey, welcome to Bloodstream. All right, February, we had Groundhog's Day this week, Blood of the Paladin's out, Pain Pod Season 2, teaser's out, Mel's here, and then later, Amy and I will be joined by rare disease podcaster Effie Parks. On a bit more serious note, there's also this Headbleed thing that I want us to get to. There's also an Access in Canada thing that's a thing. There's webinars I want to talk about. But first, dear listeners, I want you to know that the Bloodstream podcast is made possible by our presenting sponsor, Takeda. That's right, Takeda. They got this website, bleedingdisorders.com, where you'll find all sorts of information about the resources for and commitment to the bleeding disorders community. I'll tell you, this morning I went to their resources tab, found myself on their YouTube channel, which I certainly consider a resource hub. Hello, 21st century. And they've got some cool videos there, short ones on joint health, self-infusion tips, and one that's called HTC Life Hacks, which sounds interesting. I think I have to watch that one. I didn't really have time earlier, but I was like, what is that one about? As well as stuff on navigating travel with a bleeding disorder, which might be relevant again sometime before 2027. At Takeda, they believe in a world free of bleeds and are dedicated more than ever in their efforts to offer a wide range of programs and support to help patients throughout their treatment journey, wherever on that journey they may be. You can learn more by simply visiting bleedingdisorders.com. One more time, that's bleedingdisorders.com. And for their founding and ongoing support of the Bloodstream podcast, I would just like to say thanks, Takeda. Now that I got to say thanks, Takeda, I now get to ask one of my favorite questions, and that is, hello, Amy, how are you?
Okay, I think I might have an actual, like, legit answer today. Well, but I just wanted to give everyone an update on something that I mentioned like 2 weeks ago about the birds outside of my window. And I was so distracted that day, if you remember. There was just all this chirping. And I have a humongous update, like a humongous update.
What is it?
So last week it rained in LA, and we have this tarp in our backyard that's over like a stack of wood. We have firewood. It's like a thing. Anyway, if you know my boyfriend and I, you're like, of course they have a stack of firewood.
Yeah,
that's not weird.
Could have told you that.
But it made this little bath. It made this little bird bath, and like all of these birds were like living their dream, like in the bird bath. And then we heard this. I mean, they were screeching. They went nuts. And we went out there, and I swear to you, we saw them mating. Patrick, like,
whoa.
There was a male bird and like a bunch of female birds, and he was like living his best life.
A bunch of female birds?
Yes, they were everywhere.
Wow.
And we're gonna have babies everywhere. So I just, listeners, dear listeners, I'm gonna bring you along the journey, but I think I'm gonna have like baby bird stories, because they're all nesting in our Bougainvillea bushes that like surround our house.
Okay.
And we have many. I have a Post-it of all the bird species.
I'm looking at it right now.
Okay.
Is that?
This is all the bird species that are in our, we have a bird book and also binoculars in our kitchen. Here's the deal. Everyone has turned into a certain thing during this pandemic, and my boyfriend and I have turned into bird people. We were not previous. So bear with me, and this will be quick, I swear. House finches, house sparrows, white crowned sparrows, We have towhees, California towhees, who are my favorite. They're very fat and they don't fly. They eat like bird seed on the ground and they're a hoot. And then we saw one woodpecker. We saw a Nuttall's woodpecker, which has this beautiful red crown and like this red and white speckled like wing situation. And anyway, I'm going to bring you along with the journey, but it's like a menagerie back there.
I have to say, I don't think you've been prepared to this degree for anything we've done before. You've got a list, you're reading official names, you got a book. Like, this is the most prepared segment we've ever had on Bloodstream, and it's about birds.
I felt a little silly that I'm like, you know, we're going to talk about really important things today, like head bleeds, and I just want you to know that I didn't prepare anything for that, but I prepared my Post-it for the birds.
You did. You can watch the YouTube video for proof. It's true. It's an orange Post-it. All right. Well, thanks for keeping us posted. If anyone's following you on Instagram too, there's been videos along the way. You and your boyfriend posting videos of the birds. So if you're into the birds, find Amy on Instagram and you can keep up with the story. It sounds like we're also going to get updates here on Bloodstream. So just make sure you're subscribed.
Yeah.
That's pretty great. So yeah, you mentioned the bleed thing. Let's talk about that real quick. I saw this article late last week, end of January, from Kaiser Permanente in SoCal, and it said that researchers there, their doctors and researchers were joining those at over 100 hospitals that were studying the brain and bleeding in the brain and something that they are calling FASTIST. It's an acronym, and apparently it stands for Factor 7A, that's the F, Factor 7A, for acute
hemorrhagic? Basically like a hemorrhage in the brain that causes stroke, right?
Yeah. So it's acute hemorrhagic stroke administered at earliest time. That's fastest, apparently. Interestingly enough, when I tried to go back to this article this morning to like get a little more info, it was gone. It was gone. So the place that had put it up took it down. But this is obviously like a big thing that over 100 hospitals are participating in. So I want us to reach out to some expert to come on to talk about this. Because, you know, as listeners know, my brother passed from a bleed in his brain. Brain bleeds are one of the biggest fears in the community, especially amongst parents. And I don't mean to project that, but I think that's just true. So I'd like to have somebody come on, kind of talk about like, what is all this? What exactly is Factor 7's role in stroke and like in the brain? And just kind of like unpack that. So I want to leave it there for now, but it was just too big a headline to not mention. And kind of along those lines, Amy, I saw just this morning, added it last minute. Funny enough, from Unspeakable, which was a television show in Canada, listeners may remember we had the creator of that show, Robert Cooper, on to talk about his experience with hemophilia and hepatitis and why he created Unspeakable, which you can look up and watch. It's a great show going through the blood contamination crisis from the Canadian perspective. But anyway, they were posting that like Canadians with hemophilia A need help. And I was like, wow, why is a show talking about this? So I opened up the thing, and it turns out that the advocacy groups in Canada are putting out this call right now for people in every province across Canada to rally together because health authorities are considering whether or not to pay for Hemlibra, emicizumab. We had Patrick O'Mahony on from the Irish Society a few weeks ago, and he talked about how the system in Ireland is set up as such where all hemophilia A patients are on Hemlibra. And that's, I want to unpack that as well at some point, the way these different healthcare systems around the world work. So when there is a new drug, there's like all these nuanced reasons why it's available here, but not there, and to some people, not to other people. But I just thought that was really interesting that like, okay, Canada's currently having to make the big push to get Hemlibra, and, you know, when a television show is like getting involved in advocacy efforts, it just suggests like, wow, this has reached a certain fever pitch. So something to kind of keep an eye out for to see how that develops.
And just a reminder that us here in the States, in America, we have choice. We really truly do have choice, and it's a it might be an individual, you know, battle with an insurance company not willing to pay for a certain treatment. But overall, I mean, it is we truly have the ability to choose our treatments,
which I'm so grateful for, because the two treatments just don't work the same way in everybody. They just don't. So, you know, I would actually be quite nervous to live in a place where it was like, you have to be on this one thing, even though there's 10 different things available and there's data to suggest different ones working. But anyway, a whole nother big topic. But speaking of big topics, last thing I want to mention before we bring on Mel to talk Pain Pod, NHF, you may have heard of them, National Hemophilia Foundation. As you know, they do these webinar series occasionally, or not more than occasionally, but there's one currently going on in February that I wanted to just shout out and give you the headlines of the ones that are coming up, because they're kind of interesting. There was one that just passed on this past Wednesday the 3rd, the impact of heavy menstrual bleeding on pelvic health. I don't know if that's going to be available to watch after the fact. You do have to register these things through NHF's website. It might be, but I'm not sure about that. So if you're interested in that one, you'll have to do a little homework. But the ones coming up on Feb 10, curative therapies for sickle cell disease. Dr. Beverly Frances Gibson from the Sickle Cell Disease Association of America, who we have had on the Cheat Codes podcast before. She'll be one of those presenters, which is pretty cool. Feb 17, Brian Andrew is doing a webinar on financial and economic outlook. So for those who, that's a top of mind consideration right now, Feb 17, financial and economic outlook. And then Feb 24, HTC patient satisfaction survey with Judith Baker. So that's another good one to see what patients are responding to in the HTCs, or what they did in 2020, along with a preview of the 2021 survey. So that's pretty interesting to me. We talk a lot about what HTCs do and do not offer, what they might be able to offer going forward. So I think that's one I want to asterisk to make sure I pay attention to. So all of that's on NHF's website, hemophilia.org. You can look at their webinar page to see the February Wednesday webinars. There'll be a link in the program notes as well. And speaking of menstrual bleeding, Amy, I did want to mention, I think we're going to have a pretty special guest on in the not-too-distant future to talk about that, as well as about, finally, those VWD guidelines that we've been wanting to give people more information on.
We just confirmed.
We'll probably chat about that toward the end, but what can you tell us?
I don't want to give it away because it's very fun, but we just confirmed a pretty spectacular guest who's going to walk us through those guidelines. It's a lot. It's very heady, but we're really going to, like, dig in deep. So anyway, that's coming up in the next few weeks.
That's so cool. I'm glad that worked out. Took just a little minute, but we got the right person. So well worth it.
And Twitter, we slid into someone's Twitter DMs, which personally
that is literally
for me,
true.
I know. And I mean, I wanted to tell her that in the email exchange that we had, like, by the way, we love that we slid into your DMs, but I was like, I don't know. I don't know her yet. I don't know if she's like going to get the joke.
Save it for on mic, you know,
great.
At least the audience will.
Great.
All right. So with that, let's bring on Mel, talk about the Pain Pod. After Mel, we'll hear a little teaser from the Pain Pod and then talk to Effie Parks. Man, we got a lot of show left. So
good. Let's
get to it.
Good stuff.
Amy and I are now joined by our colleague, Mel Forrest. She, amongst other things, is the host of the Pain Pod Season 2, here to tell us all about it. Hi, Mel. Welcome. Thanks for coming on Bloodstream.
Hi. Thank you guys for having me. So good to see your faces.
It's been so fun hearing your voice on Pain Pod this season. Let's just dive right into it. We don't have you for a whole lot of time. So can you describe for us what your experience has been on the Pain Pod Season 2? Listeners will remember Season 1 from just a few months back. Mel's been running with Season 2 and is here today to tell us all about it.
Yeah. It's been a great experience. I've been very honored to be able to host this season because we are featuring 7 different personal stories about chronic pain, and hopefully get some of these stories out there. They're really wonderful.
For sure. Yeah, and you've mentioned a few times as we've gone through notes too, like how each of these stories is so indicative of many, many other stories out there about life with pain. Could you maybe share a little bit about that? What have you learned about life with chronic pain as a result of speaking to so many patients about their experience?
Well, I think that there are a lot of misconceptions about chronic pain, but also we forget that chronic pain is a daily process. So it doesn't just affect like the big things in life or the things like just like, oh, I would like to ride a bike, but that's going to be painful. This is affecting sometimes, you know, parts of life for people that seem very commonplace to others, like taking a shower or just getting up in the day, you know, whether the temperature is too cold or hot. And then there are a lot of misconceptions that once you have chronic pain that I think sometimes people feel like they're viewed as less of a person because their abilities have changed or their pain threshold has changed. But I think that's a big misconception because there is life with chronic pain. And although it may be different, it is a full life.
You know, Mel, I think it's an interesting experience to go into a a project like this, such a deeply personal human project like this, and to have maybe some foundational beliefs of what you would think chronic pain would be like, or what you thought you were going to get from the people that you interviewed? And what were some of the things, like what were some of the misconceptions that, you know, kind of threw you, or something you learned or something that you truly grasped in relating and talking with these people?
That's a really great question. I think that, I know it sounds cliche that to say that everybody's pain is different, but I think when we talk about pain, we really lump it into one thing. We think about the physical pain, and at least like right away, that's what we think of. But when you experience it, it does affect your whole life. It does affect not even just the physical nature of getting out of bed. It can affect your mental state, and it affects how you choose to do things in your life. And that can be, you know, how you view yourself. And it brought the meaning of pain to another level of what we don't always see what someone is experiencing. We don't see the whole picture. You know, when someone says like, I suffer from neck pain, well, we think, okay, so then they can't do these specific things. We don't understand how that's affecting them mentally, and how that's going to affect the rest of their lives and how they view themselves or what they can do. So it really is like a full life that you start to grasp when someone is dealing with pain on a daily basis.
We're talking, of course, about the Pain Pod Season 2, which starts next Tuesday. The teaser is actually out now, and we're going to play the teaser for you at the end of this short interview here with Mel. But Mel, I want to ask you a question about the writing process, because in writing and producing Season 1, I found it was so interesting to me to kind of think about the ways these stories related to each other. Now, Season 1, a bit different, much more clinically and medically oriented, but nonetheless, it was still figuring out how all of these different voices on pain coalesced and were kind of telling a cohesive story across the arc of the season. How did you think about that with this season being about the patient odyssey experience? How did you go about the writing process?
It's funny because everybody's story is so different, but you do find pockets where things overlap and they're the same. And you don't want to minimize someone's experience and say, oh, it's the same as this other person's. But you start to realize there is like a full journey to pain. And you know, someone doesn't, they're all in different parts of it. And there is, it almost, you know, it's not exactly like his journey, but it does have moments of like, there is a beginning sometimes to pain, or there isn't a clear beginning, but there is a start. So it's when someone might start to notice it. And then there are moments of acceptance and low moments of depression and different treatments that go along with it. And although they may not be the same, I think that there are a lot of overlaps, and people can hear something in each of these stories that they can relate to. And I think that also helps people empathize and build connections with someone that they may not have the exact pain with. So in telling the story, you kind of look at the whole picture, and from where it began to where they are now and where they hope to be in the future. And that can really, you know, help find pockets that are similar and also amplify the different parts and really make each story unique, but also relatable.
Mel, you are one of our newest employees at Believe Limited and Bloodstream Media, although you've been in our orbit for a long time. But I wonder, is this your first time on the podcast, by the way? I feel
this is my first time on the podcast. First time caller, long time listener. So
wow.
Happy to have you.
Wow. So Mel's one of those wonderful friends that will like text me and be like, by the way, this was hilarious on Bloodstream. I'll be like, you listened? You're like, oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, if you tell me to listen, I'm one of those people that's like, I have something and I'm like, you know, I can't make it that day, but I'll make it. At least I'm trying to be better at that. I mean, obviously none of us are like that now, but now I can listen to all these podcasts.
Yes. I wondered if you would tell our audience, just to introduce you a little bit, about your background and how you came to Believe and, you know, what you're bringing in particular uniquely to this project.
Yeah, background, it's so funny, you know, we do so many things with our lives, but I would say that I am primarily a creative. So I'm a writer, a producer and a performer in my real life. And I get to do that with Believe, which is really wonderful. So with Believe, I am also a writer producer. organizer of office supplies, which I genuinely love to do. So I can't wait to get back in the office. I love a nice organized desk.
We so appreciate you, Mel. I so appreciate you.
I like a good Excel spreadsheet that's very clear. I do like that. So, you know, I try to bring a lot of creativity to what I do at Believe. And I think everybody does in a way. That's what's so unique about working for Believe is that you're encouraged to do that. And I came along through my fiance, Seth Kirshner, who is a part of the Believe team, you know, OG Believe team, Stop the Bleeding. He plays Benny on Stop the Bleeding, writer as well. So it's kind of nice because we get to share ideas coming from very different viewpoints, but also with the same goal in mind. I get to bounce ideas off of him and bring them to you guys, you know, but with my own spin. So it's been really fun. It's honestly been really great. I really love being part of the team.
We love you.
Well, and now that you've said that on a podcast, you know, recorded for all of history, we know how much you love it here. It's funny you mentioned, you know, your Seth. I remember now it was 10 plus years ago or 10 years ago at this point where he and I were sitting next to each other in a call center just talking about projects that we were working on. And mine was Stop the Bleeding, and his is coming to fruition after quite an incredible journey. So it's just like, wow, that was 10 years ago? Yes, it was. It was somehow. Well, thank you for everything that you've given to Believe and given to the Pain Pod in particular. It was a it gave me great confidence when you were the person taking it over, because, you know, you start a project, it feels like a baby, and then you're like, oh no, the baby's going to a school now, and like, but you're the teacher, so it's fine. It's the baby can go away now. So thank you for everything that you have done. I also want to give a shout out to our producer, Greg, who is also the editor on the Pain Podcast and is responsible for the really dynamic soundscape that we build to help move the experience and hopefully help move you. So enjoy the teaser. Mel, again, thanks for coming on Bloodstream. And on the other side, Amy and I will be back with fellow rare disease podcaster, Effie Parks.
You are afraid right now because you live with pain, and your fear is causing you to stop doing the things that you love.
It's funny because people, like doctors and people, will ask, like, what is your goal? And I'm like, I don't even know what life is like being pain-free. Like, I don't think I've gone a day without pain.
I want to be seen as a competent individual in society who can lead my congregation, who can teach a class, who can do, you know, whatever that is that we do.
To understand someone's pain is really to understand them.
No matter where you are on this journey, you still have worth.
Pain. It has many definitions. It can be a physical discomfort brought on by injury or disease, a complex sensation associated with tissue damage, or even a mental or emotional distress. It's that feeling when you realize something is too hot after you've already touched it. When you've pushed yourself a little too hard during that last workout, or even the early warning sign that something just isn't right. Most people have experienced pain at some point in their life, but what if that pain didn't stop? Approximately 50 million adults in the U.S. suffer from chronic pain, and although pain may seem universal, each individual's experience is unique. So this season on the Pain Podcast, we've decided to get personal, because no two people are the same, and neither are their experiences with chronic pain. Listen as individuals share their own journeys and delve into the ups and downs, the treatments, and the many, many other facets that make up a life with chronic pain. Because pain is personal. Hi. Some of you may be thinking, that voice sounds a little different from last season. And that's because it is. I'm Mel Forrest, your host this season for the Pain Podcast. If you're just tuning in, don't worry, you can always catch up on old episodes at bloodstreammedia.com. But for now, I'll do a little recap. In the first season of the Pain Podcast, we spoke with expert clinicians and people living with chronic pain to answer the question, what do we really know about pain? Well, we ended up learning a lot. We heard stories from patients, providers, and public health experts, discussed the opioid epidemic, learned different techniques to manage pain, and even discussed how gender and racial bias can affect a person's ability to address pain. Like I said, we learned a lot. And this season, we're taking a more personal approach, because there's a lot to learn from listening to each person's individual and unique story. I feel so honored and excited to be hosting this season, and I hope that you join us on this journey. Tune in February 9th for episode 1 of the second season of the Pain Podcast. And thank you once again to the Pain Podcast presenting sponsor, Tremo Pharmaceuticals. You can learn more about them at TremoRx.com. Talk to you again on the 9th.
Amy and I are joined now by Effie Parks, creator and host of the Once Upon a Gene podcast, sharing true stories of raising rare kiddos. Welcome to Bloodstream, Effie. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Hi, Patrick. Hi, Amy. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really excited to be here.
It's been fun to see your podcast pop up for so long and to check out episodes and to, like, it's funny, right? I feel as though I've gotten to know you a little bit over time because of the podcast. I'm sure you hear that, but this is the first time that we're actually speaking in any capacity, so this is such a treat. Let's level set for everybody. What is the Once Upon a Gene podcast, and why did you start it?
Thank you. I feel like I know everybody here, too. It's kind of like a small community. Once Upon a Gene is a podcast I created a couple years ago. My son Ford was born in 2016 with a rare disease called CTNNB1. Obviously, the road to the diagnosis is treacherous, but once we got it, we were told that Ford was 1 in 30, and she had nothing else to really lend us other than a couple tidbits that were dreary. So, you know, there was a lot of dark days after that, and it was really stressful, and I was fumbling through it, and I didn't know anyone who was raising a kid like mine. And I just got to the point where I was searching for others like me, and I found podcasts specifically because I was in the car all the time taking Ford to and from the doctors.
Sure.
And yeah. There were a couple on that were talking about stuff that I was just searching for and yearning for, but that content dried up really quick a couple years ago. There just wasn't a lot on the topic. And I really just felt compelled that it was a piece of my purpose and I needed to connect with these people for myself, but to also be a little light for another family or parent who was going through this and didn't know where to turn.
Do you find your audience, I mean, your son is 1 in 30. Do you find your audience the ultra rare community? I mean, obviously it's you know, not just your son's community. Who have you found most connection with?
That's a good question. He's 1 in almost 200 now, as you know. The genetic testing is becoming more prominent. The audience is, you're always told to niche, find your niche. Mm-hmm. But I've really found a lot of listeners from so many different areas in this world. Some are rare disease patients, some are biotech places, some are grandparents who don't know what their mm-hmm. children and their grandkids are going through because maybe they're too afraid to ask, maybe the family's too stressed out, and they're trying to gain insight into our world as well. So I get a lot of different kinds of messages in my email from people I didn't necessarily expect to be listening to my show. But then I also understand it because when I was looking, I would turn on anything that had these buzzwords that I was looking for: inclusive, rare disease, disability. Mm-hmm. I'm a cult follower of the two disabled dudes, even though that has nothing to do with Ford, but it was something that I connected to, and I felt like we understood each other. And so the audience is kind of random in a way, but sometimes it's just passive, right? Like the people mm-hmm. who want to know what we're going through, who don't necessarily mm-hmm. feel like they can ask.
So I want to take a little step back. What is CTNNB1, Ford's condition? And when did you first learn about it? Was it at birth, just before? Give us a little bit of that diagnosis journey, if you would.
Ford would not eat for the first couple months. We couldn't get any food down him. And we just kept going in and in and telling our pediatrician that something was wrong. And around 4 months old, she finally agreed. And Ford was admitted into the hospital immediately with failure to thrive, which started us out on that journey. A geneticist picked us up right away because she was intrigued. She thought she had an idea of what Ford had, which was wonderful because it pushed everything along quicker than I think most families maybe get. Ultimately, the diagnosis came when he was 16 months old. And yeah, it was a shock. I really didn't expect something to come back from a genetic test. Man, that was intense. And when she told us about it, she just said, you know, I found one paper on it. A couple of the kids can say several words and a couple of the kids can take several steps. That's all I know. So,
wow.
Yeah. When I Googled it, thank the Lord, one of the parents had actually taken the steps to start creating a community. So there was a Facebook group and he had made a website. They were in the works of making it a 501c3 at that point. So they had as much information as they could gather too. But CTNNB1, it's a neurodevelopmental disorder. They're not producing enough or any of a protein called beta-catenin, which is unfortunately a really important protein. And it has a lot of jobs. So it has to do with cell growth, reproduction, adhesion, and just aging of the cells in general. And it causes a myriad of symptoms like most rare diseases do. But that's kind of like the core of it.
You know, it's funny you mentioned missing a protein. And, you know, so I have hemophilia. I'm missing a protein. I know other people who have, they're missing a protein. Like these proteins have so much to do with how we function properly. And if you're deficient in one or absent of one, it can mean the ramifications can be so broad. And ultimately, it's all about proteins, which is, I didn't know when I was in science class as a kid that like proteins were going to be extraordinarily important all of my life. But actually, at that point, I also never anticipated being this knee deep in science when I was a kid. I was a patient, you know, different story. It wasn't as though it was brought into my life when I had a child. But at the same time, I was just a kid living as a kid. And at a certain point, realized, oh, I got to know more about this so that I can advocate for myself and figure out what it is I need and how to get to it. What was your background before Ford? Did you have a science background at all, or was this all new to you?
No, I was like, can I just give him a steak? Will that help? Is that what you mean by protein? No, I'm a hairstylist. I have a salon in Seattle, totally out of this realm entirely. And like I said, I mean, I just didn't know anything about this community, which is another reason that I had to go digging because I didn't like being afraid and I didn't like not knowing anything and I didn't know how to advocate for myself or my son. So I definitely sought out as many resources as I could to learn. And I still don't even really have a huge understanding of everything, but I'm trying. And it is really fascinating as you dig into it, like you said. But I feel like I learned so much from my guests too. And, you know, even just watching these kids on these groups as they grow up, we learn so much from each other by bouncing off symptoms and behavioral things and medicines and all of that stuff, just to learn how to best take care of my own child.
Yeah. Is there a story of a particular piece of advice or idea that came through either because of the podcast or because of one of these social media groups that you belong to that like, oh, I don't think I ever would have stumbled upon that if it hadn't been for the show or this group?
That's a tough one. There's so many things. I think one of the most important things I've learned along the way is to really just open yourself up and really gather your community around you, however big or small that may be, but really being open-hearted to accepting help from people, asking for help from people, and kind of doing this as a team, because it's an isolating world if you let it be. It's a scary world. You have to have a lot of hope and you have to have a lot of commitment. And sometimes you need to delegate, right? Sometimes you have to have those people and you have to nurture that sort of understanding in this walk of life because it's hard and there's a lot to do and you're never going to do enough. And to just know that that's okay and to really find your footing and your balance on what's the best thing for your family, not what they're doing, not how much money they're raising, not anything like that, but what are the pieces you can take from all of these things that's going to best help you and your immediate family.
So what does Ford think about, or how does Ford respond to all the work that mommy's doing in his world, on his behalf, in this rare disease world? What's his experience of all this?
Ford is not like any other person that is on this planet. And I think we all say that about our kids. But I'm not sure Ford is necessarily aware of what I'm doing with my podcast and with however I try to best take care of him or advocate for him. But he is just always motivated, and he's so happy, and he's such a hard worker. Like, any type of therapy that Ford's in, anytime he gets to be around people, anytime that he is pushing himself forward and conquering something hard, whether it's, you know, staying in his stander longer or trying to drink out of a cup instead of a straw, like, he's always so motivated, and he just has so much joy that it doesn't matter what you're doing. As long as Ford gets to come along for the ride, he's in it. And, you know, also I think with a lot of kids, he feeds off our energy. So that is definitely something that we try to be mindful of too, is just making sure that, you know, we kind of have just a lot of honest feelings and always try to just really be in the mindset of hope and light to let Ford kind of feel that from us as well. But he's just the happiest, most easy breezy little bright piece of sunshine that he doesn't even care. As long as everybody's good, he's good.
How did COVID in the last 12 months particularly impact you and your husband's ability to manage the family and make everything happen?
Kind of a bunch of different things. This is the easiest year we've ever had with Ford health-wise. He's constantly had pneumonia or some type of respiratory virus. Due to his extremely low tone, he is sick. He has a fever every day of his life. 2020 was a breeze. He wasn't sick from March on. He still hasn't been sick. And that has been a dream. We're constantly dealing with Ford's respiratory viruses and fevers. So that was like a cakewalk. And it was just amazing to have him so healthy. And it was amazing. Therapy-wise, you know, unfortunately, Ford did regress a lot in certain areas just because he wasn't getting all of that hard-hitting stuff all the time. But I did take him to an intensive therapy that kind of brought us back up to speed, which was really cool. He's had so much more time at home with the family, which is definitely one of his happy places. So like every morning he's so excited and he's like, yeah, it's you guys again. Oh my gosh, mom and dad. So he's loved the family aspect of it. He definitely missed his therapists and his school bus and his just social environment. But that's starting to trickle back in. He's back in preschool for 2 hours a day at school. So the bus comes and his bus driver and him are buddies. So that's been great. But all in all, obviously 2020 had, you know, a lot of horrible stuff just because it was so vast for everyone. But for Ford himself, wasn't bad.
That's great to hear. Good. Good for Ford. Yeah, I'm glad he benefited from that year. Did. You know, like someone needed to.
Yeah. Ford likes not going into the hospital.
You know what? He and I agree on that. That's a good thing. Not going to the hospital is a good thing. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Ford also has a younger sibling. And I'm curious to know some of the conversations that you and your husband had on the heels of Ford's diagnosis and starting that journey and decisions around the family. I know that's something that comes up a lot in my circles when there's a diagnosis, a genetic diagnosis that's brought into the mix. It influences the family planning conversations, of course. So whatever you'd like to share about that, I'm really interested to hear about.
Sure. You know, Casey and I would have had 100 children if we would have met a long time ago. We both knew that we wanted to have more than one child. For the sibling aspect, especially, I have 12 brothers and sisters, so I was not going to be leaving my kid and only sibling. You know what I mean? We all.
That's like a whole other podcast.
Yeah, for real. I keep telling them. We did have the comfort in knowing that CT and NB1 was something that we didn't pass on to Ford, which I know not every family has. Mm. So we didn't have that extra layer of difficulty in family planning. What we had was, holy crap, can we do this? And, you know, Ford's going to be so expensive and we're going to be taking care of him for the rest of our life. And, you know, emotionally and physically, this is going to be really difficult. But, you know, then there's this other side of it, right? Like, siblings are so special and they're the only people who know where you came from. And Ford loves people so much, the more the merrier, that I knew that having a sibling for him was just going to enrich the quality of his life. And knowing all of this, all of the rare disease siblings that I know of now, they're not normal people. They're the most compassionate, like empathetic, just really special, unsung heroes, really, that are walking around this world. And they are the teachers, I feel like, who just have a deeper understanding. And even though it's really difficult and I don't take all of the hard stuff that comes with being a sibling, they are some of the most amazing people who have the glue, I think, that really binds families. So, yeah, we were really excited to do it. And it was mainly like, how am I going to do this with Ford? But it wasn't as difficult of a decision for us as it perhaps was for other families.
I'm wondering about the families that you hear from. What do they find to be most either impactful, or what do they bring up to you when they email you about your podcast or reach out to you about your work? What are the topics that people are referencing? What do you find people are getting from what you're doing?
Almost every person really feels seen and heard, even if it's not their story. When they're hearing other people talk about the hard stuff and the ugly stuff and the great stuff too, or the grief in it all, like people connect so deeply to stories like that, especially, I think, over the podcasting medium where they really get to hear your soul coming through a little bit. People feeling like they aren't alone in this world is huge. And sometimes that's all it takes, right? Is even just the passive relationship of someone listening to me talking to another person where they feel understood. It changes people and it gives them hope. And it, when you don't feel alone anymore, everything changes and your mindset can shift and it can finally open up a door of maybe something that you're inspired to do. Or even if it just makes you feel better every once in a while to kind of call upon those hard things. I think it's just the human connection, to answer your question in a long way. It really validates people.
Yeah, I find similar to be true on this end as well. Have you found that there are particularly groups of parents who, like you, are looking for those buzzwords and that leads them to you? Or how are people finding you, I guess, is what I'm curious to know.
You know, I don't feel like a lot of parents are still hunting in podcast land. I think that's still kind of new to a lot of parents who are raising kids like mine, and it could be because they're completely swamped mentally, physically, emotionally. So they're on a Facebook group, but they don't necessarily know that there are these other people talking about it in maybe a more organized way with sometimes a better tone than Facebook groups can bring to you. So I still feel like there are a lot of parents who actually just don't know that we're out here doing this in podcast world. And that is, I think, podcasts' fault, because they're not really that searchable still in 2021. There's not a lot of really easy ways to find exactly what you're looking for. But yeah, families sharing it with their people in their groups is huge. I think word of mouth and a personal recommendation is not only the best compliment you can get, but it really makes someone actually pay attention. I can click through a bunch of links and blogs and stuff, but like, I'm not really going to go there unless someone's like, oh yeah, I've heard of that. Oh yeah, that's great. Or maybe I read a review and someone is like, actually, this is the real deal. Go here. But yeah, it's kind of complicated, right? To speak to everyone and make them find you.
Yeah, it's funny. I used to actually, back in 2019, I was realizing with the amount that we go to conferences and patient meetings and such, that those were really some of the best opportunities to promote the podcast, because there was just nothing better than that in-person demystifying of what is a podcast, like help them open their phone, open the podcast app, find it, like some of that real... Oh, okay, we're still at that level of just getting comfortable with this medium. So then when 2020 took that away, it was like, okay, on one hand, this is really good for podcasts because now it's all the more needed. But on the other hand, I think our best promotional tool, which is meeting people in person, just went away. So it was a little bit of an interesting paradigm shift from that point of view. Tell me about your guests. How do you go about finding your guests? You mentioned the two disabled dudes. They have their podcast. There's other podcasters in the rare disease space, so I imagine that's a natural or an easy enough one to find. But the other folks that come through, how do you find them?
Lots of different ways, really. I get contacted as much as I actually reach out, I feel like. You know, Global Genes and the Nord stuff, like you're saying, like those groups, that people that hang out in those groups, they're so active on social media and they reach out to you, or, you know, things like that. Families reach out to me by seeing Ford's picture. They see another kid using a G-tube, and so they'll start following along. I think it's a little bit of both. Some people that inspired me before my podcast, I've asked to be my guests, like the two disabled dudes that you mentioned, people who really meant a lot to me along my own journey and who inspired me, I connect with. Sometimes it's a book I read, like I have this book on grief right here, and I'll just reach out to authors and tell them what value it's added to me as a parent and how valuable I think it is for my audience. And, you know, I'd love the opportunity to know you. But people really kind of finding you too and loving what you're doing almost become your ambassador as well, right? Like they...
For sure.
Yeah. It's kind of like how it was in as a hairstylist. Like you find those people who won't stop talking about you and they go and tell you how awesome their hair looks, obviously, right? Like it's just, you can also find those people, right? Who are always going to be a champion of what you're doing because they believe in it. It kind of just trickles through. And obviously being available on all the social media platforms is important because so many of like the LinkedIn people would never be anywhere else. So many people have never even thought about starting
a
Twitter.
Did you hear about LinkedIn, Amy? Did you hear when Effie just mentioned how important LinkedIn is? I don't know if you heard that part of the conversation just now.
Oh, Effie, Patrick and LinkedIn. Oh my.
There's people oh my
gosh, it's a love affair.
Patrick, I was so resistant to LinkedIn until like, I don't know, maybe a year ago. And LinkedIn has been huge for me.
Amy, are you taking notes?
Huge.
Notes, Amy. Notes, Amy.
I've also found that it's a lot more lighthearted than I expected it to be. And maybe it's just changed and morphed a little bit as time went on. But I've found that it's not as just like serious and businessy as I expected it to be.
You know, it's true to the different networks. There's also something to be said for meeting people where they're at, which is where Believe Limited started with our first project, a web series. And everything we have done has been about where are people already and how can we make our messaging, albeit for this niche audience, but let's find the pockets where people are gathered, where we can creatively, through entertainment, message to the audience that we're looking for. And it's interesting, like podcasting, to the point you made earlier, is still... I don't know if early days is fair anymore. I don't know where we are, but it's not ubiquitous yet. It feels as though there's still a lot of room to grow. And where do you think that room to grow as an advocate, as a community, not a community builder necessarily, but someone who's engaging community and for whom community is being built around what you're doing, what do you think are some of the next steps we need to take to improve the way that we reach out to one another, advocate for each other, share best practices, especially as a rare disease community using social media and the digital platform where we're not necessarily as isolated as we are in the actual physical world from people who share our life experience? Like, what are some of the next steps we can take to improve these tools that we have?
Well, I think as rare disease podcasters, I think it would be cool for us to just actually kind of have a roundtable meeting maybe once a month and talk about what's going on with us and how we're podcasting to our audience in general and all of the things, right? Like, I think that would be cool if our niche, so to speak, would kind of gather together and not necessarily have silos, right? Like actually be a team, which I think we are, but it just takes extra steps, right? To kind of mm-hmm. make those things happen. I think it would be cool also if we kind of introduced our audiences to each other. Maybe that's just a short little blurb at the end of every one of our episodes, because maybe, you know, hemophilia parents who have kids who are also having extra issues might really connect with a lot of my guests or my personal stories and vice versa. Sure. So I think that's another way to really introduce other podcasts, because maybe yours are like, oh, Effie's just a mom. I don't want to hear mom stories, which is not what it is, right? But you never know. So I think that's another unique way to maybe introduce kind of our space, because it is vast. Even though it feels like a small little community that we have, there's a lot going on. And you never know who's listening, right? You never know what you're going to connect with to a different host or a different guest on someone's show, or what resource you can find in it. So I think kind of thinking about creative ways that we can all kind of work together a little more would be cool. Maybe it's a once a year, like, rare disease podcast summit situation. Stuff like that to just kind of get podcasts more in front of our community, our network of people. So I don't know. I've just kind of just been thinking about stuff like that lately. Did I answer your question?
You answered the question and gave me ideas, and that's dangerous. So.
Well, help me. Let's do it.
All right. We'll continue that discussion offline. Amy, I'm conscious I've been talking a lot here. I want to give you a chance to ask any final questions, make any final comments before we wrap up with Effie.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you, Effie. And of course, Patrick, there was a lawnmower outside for the entirety of this interview. And so Patrick just took one for the team. And we're just living our COVID recording life. So
so there were moments I was looking over and I was like, did you want to get your voice in here? And I would see that you were not.
It was just on mute.
Okay.
It was just on mute the whole time, which is just great. I enjoyed listening. No, but thank you, Effie. Really, I think what you're doing is so valuable and so important and so human. And it's special. It's special to hear your story. It's special to hear about Ford. And I'm excited to hear more.
Where can people hear more? Where can people find your stuff?
Thank you, everybody. You can find me anywhere. Like I said, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm on all the social medias. You can find my podcast on any podcast app, or you can go to onceuponagene.com and listen there. I'm accessible. So if you have any questions or anything, you can always email me. Sometimes it takes me a couple days, you know, but I will get back to you. And
I must say, I have to give you props on the podcast name. It's great.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
I think it's charming. I think it's great.
I appreciate it.
I also shout out on your website, you have talk about people can find you anywhere. If you just go to, is it effieparks.com and onceuponagene.com, they go to the same spot? Smart. Yep. If you scroll to the bottom, there's like 157 icons for every social media platform, every podcast platform. It cannot have been made any easier to track down the Once Upon a Gene podcast. Just go to Effie Parks on onceuponagene.com, scroll to the bottom. You got links for days to keep up. And I like this idea of some kind of rare disease podcast summit. So we'll have to offline and come back to that idea, and we'll keep listeners abreast. But I think that's a really good idea. So it's a matter of execution. Maybe we can make it happen.
Yes. Well, if anyone can, I'm sure the both of you can. So thank you so much for having me. It was really fun to get to meet you and be on your show.
Likewise. Thanks for coming on, and take care. Thank you, Effie. Once Upon a Gene is the name of her podcast. Please go listen and subscribe to that. And while you're at it, and thank you, Mel, for appearing, The Pain Podcast is also available for you to subscribe, listen to. Season 1 is out in full right now, the teaser for 2 as well, and the episodes will be rolling out on Tuesdays for the next few weeks. So subscribe to The Pain Podcast to have them delivered to you exactly when they go live.
The Pain Podcast is so great. It's one of my favorite things that we do. It's very important. So anyway, subscribe and make sure that comes through your way on every podcast platform and all the things. And next week, we are actually going to do a deep dive into those VWD guidelines. The Shematologist. She calls herself the Shematologist. Dr. Annie Wind from the University of Michigan is going to be with us. She was a part of developing those guidelines and has been such an avid advocate for women.
She has,
like,
yeah.
On Twitter, basically. Anyway, she's a Twitter star, and we're very excited to have her. So stick around next week.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a really great conversation. I'm excited to finally actually, you know, engage with her in a way outside of Twitter. So thanks for that. Thank you again to Effie and to Mel for appearing today. Thank you, Greg, for everything you do for the Bloodstream podcast and the Pain Pod and everything at Bloodstream Media. Thanks to everybody at Bloodstream Media for helping make this podcast possible. Takeda, thank you for being the presenting sponsor of the Bloodstream podcast, bleedingdisorders.com, to learn more about things like HTC life hacks. And with that, that is all for this episode. Have a bleeding disorders or a health topic that you'd like to hear us discuss? Is there an expert or a guest that you are just dying to hear from? Well, do you want to inquire about casting opportunities for Bloodstream's narrative and docu-styled podcast series and everything else we got going on? You can email us at mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com. You can also connect with Bloodstream Media on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or you can follow Amy Board to learn about birds, or me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or LinkedIn. Shout out to all the committed LinkedIn users out there. It's like Bitcoin, right? They doubted
including
us once,
Effie Parks, who loves LinkedIn, who's Patrick's LinkedIn friend.
My new bestie. You can check out the program notes for this episode in your podcast player or on bloodstreammedia.com, where you'll find, you can't listen to links in a thing, you're listening now, and you'll find information related to the stories and segments featured on this episode. I'm going to pull an Amy Board real quick and go rogue to also tell you at bloodstreammedia.com/contact, as of like recently, there's a little blue button on the left-hand side that enables you, dear listener, to send us a voice message with your bleeding disorder story, or your request to discuss a topic on the podcast, or whatever you really like, as long as it's 90 seconds or less. It won't let you record more than that. If you go to bloodstreammedia.com/contact, again, on the right-hand side, send voice message, and if it's something related to the Bloodstream podcast, to women with bleeding disorders, something for the Pain Pod, something you'd like the Cheat Code Sickle Cell guys to hear, anything Bloodstream Media, Blood of the Paladin, Jonathan Hill, send it there, and we will direct it accordingly. There'll be more on that later. Just wanted to slip it in. With that, I am your host, Patrick James Lind.
And I am that other host, Amy Board.
And until next time, take self-care of yourself. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.